One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to the Criminal Connection podcast. My name is Terry Stone, and today we are joined by a legend of the Sikh community. He is one of the Indian community's top boys. Some people refer to him as a Robin Hood of the Indian community, but I want you to put your hands together for Injection. Whee.
Hey then, guys, you all right? Thanks for coming. What's going on, my bro? You good?
And, you know, you're our first ever Sikh guest, so I want to welcome you.
Thank you,
thank you, Manny, for hooking us up and introducing
top
us.
Top lad, man, top lad.
Yeah, he's great.
So just a quick big up to Manny, my guy from Marbella, yeah? So let me tell you a quick story. So he's got in touch with me and he goes to me, he goes, I've got a guy that wants to do a podcast with you, right? And I think I told you this as well, I had to Google you, didn't I, right? So I go, who's this guy? And he goes to me, he goes, this is the guy, this is his name. It went on to Google. And I thought, I fucking know this guy. That's that guy from Rise of the Foot Soldiers, right?
You didn't recognise him at the week.
No, I didn't know. So then when I was like, he's a fucking...
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems, too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and, of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Boy, you know what I mean? So I was like, yeah, I'm up for that. I wasn't even gonna entertain it, I'll be honest with you, but I get so many people contacting me for music videos, for fucking movies. We were just talking about movies right. Just now, podcasts and everything. I just, you know what, I try and I keep it limited.
But you
as
look
possible.
In great shape.
Thank you, my bro.
And
42
and
years old, no white hair, no nothing. Right. All natural.
So what's your secrets then? So you look so good. You eat well, you train.
Okay, so I'm gonna be honest here. I eat loads of rubbish. Kebabs, burgers, pizzas, you name it. Every single thing. Last time I had a salad was probably about 4 years ago, yeah?
And that was in a kebab.
Yeah, that was in a kebab. So I don't eat healthy food. I take on a lot of stress. I take on a lot of bullshit from people's lives and what people's issues that are going on. I'm taking them on board. And on top of that, I've got my own issues. So stress-wise, my stress levels are at the top. So I think the only thing that's probably kept me going is the gym. That's the only thing I could think of, is I've just been pumping gym since I was 14 years old. I'm now 42 years old, so you can imagine like how long it's been. It's been quite a long time, 27, 28 years.
Gym veteran.
Yeah.
And for any of our listeners or viewers that may not be familiar about your story, what I'd love to do is like rewind right back to when you grew up. Was you born in this country?
Yes, I was born here. From a very young age, I'd seen a lot, I'll be honest with you. Nowhere near how the generation before me, which had seen a lot of, racially motivated attacks and stuff like that. I didn't see none of that, yeah? Right. I was blessed in that way. But, you know, when you have, I mean, I don't know if you've got any kids, right? But
yeah,
when you've normally got one and more than one kid, you can always tell one is always different from the other. They're both never the same. One will be a careless one, and most likely the other one will be the very caring one that takes everything in.
Yeah.
So I was always, from that young age, I was that type of person that always took everything in, and right. I observed and acknowledged everything. And I used to see my parents working. My mum used to work four jobs a day.
Wow.
You know, my dad used to work in a boiling foundry. He would come home covered in scars because the boiling metal has gone through his overalls and has burnt through his skin. And you know, we're doing 12-hour, 15-hour shifts, you know, standing in hot temperatures like that, right? So I'd seen it all, and I see how hard my parents, how they struggled. And then I think to top it all up, what made the whole situation worse, a member of my family, he went down the wrong path. He went onto drugs, and it was unfortunate that it was because of those events, because of what had happened, I went down the wrong path myself. I started kicking off with criminals, gangsters, and this is at the age of 15. I basically, I think when we were talking before, I was explaining to you, I gave a lot of the so-called local gangsters in my area 2 weeks' notice to stop selling drugs to this particular member of my family.
This was in Southall, right?
This is in Southall, yeah.
Southall, right.
And bro, these guys at that time, nowadays you go there, there's a drug dealer on every street. Yeah, everyone wants to call themselves a gangster because they carry a blade. Back in the days, it weren't about that. It was about being hard, you know what I mean? Right. And so these guys, they were solid guys, and you know, everyone had their set teams who were shot in gear, and one would stop selling to this member of the family, and then the other one would start, and then it was just basically a vicious circle. And then, so I gave them all 2 weeks' notice, and after 2 weeks, at the beginning, they thought I was just chatting rubbish, and then people started getting hurt. You know, a 15-year-old boy walking down the streets with a machete in one hand and a Stanley knife in the other. I was literally just going for numbers. I didn't care. 10, 15 people standing in front of me, I was carving them up, taking down as many people as possible. And to be honest with you, nowadays, if you were to do that...
But a CCTV now, there wasn't then.
Exactly. You understand? I was lucky, I guess, you know, because it sort of just come afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
And... but now when you do something like that, you think of the repercussions.
Yeah,
and you think, okay, if I go for this person, they're most likely connected. They're going to come land down my yard, or they're going to come and do this, or they're going to come and do that, right? Or, you know, I've got to be careful when I'm walking down the street because they might try and jump me. At that time, I didn't care. There was so much aggression and anger that it overpowered everything. And all I could see was just hurting people.
You know, when you've got, and this was this your brother?
Yeah.
Right, so your brother...
He's sound as gold now. This guy, he's good as gold. Yeah. He sorted his life out. He's a gem.
But at the time, these people was obviously preying on him, getting him hooked on drugs. Mm. And obviously you as a caring brother, you know, you can understand why people, you know, and the thing is, when you said to him, fucking stop, most people would go, you know what, let's fucking sell some drugs to someone else. But when
they laughed up because they thought he was a 15-year-old you little youth.
Right.
That's what they thought.
But I didn't laugh when you turned up with a fucking machete.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have been a scary sight. Have you always been the same size? Was you that big when you
were 15? I've always been quite big, yeah. Wow. You know, I started training at the age of 14. But before that, I was quite on the heavy side, quite chubby. And then when I did start training, I trimmed down quite a lot. So I was always quite tall and, you know, quite bulky. But yeah, it was, I don't think they were expecting it, to be honest with you. And I think the way I came at them, they weren't expecting that because they thought he's a 15-year-old boy. What, we can't even do anything back to him.
Right.
So it was literally like every week, like there was someone in hospital or, you know.
And I take it, obviously, you deciding to go down that vigilante path.
Yeah.
You were the Charles Bronson of fucking Southall, right? You rocked up and just fucking dished out your own law and order.
Yeah.
I take it after that, did they stop selling the drugs to him then?
Yeah.
Right. So it had the desired effect.
It did. Look, with shit like that, there's always consequences. you know, I've had people come to my yard, let shots off. People torch up my parents' cars. You know, it's all part of the game. Right. You understand what I'm saying? And would I change it all if I could? No. I mean, yes, because I went through a lot of headache at the time.
Yeah.
But if I was to change all of that, then I wouldn't be who I am today. And to be honest with you, the results I'm getting now from helping people, you can't explain.
Amazing.
It's like, imagine you were to go to someone's, this is the equivalent of you going to someone that probably eats a meal once every 3 days or 2 days, right. Yeah? And, you know, he comes from a poor family, then you suddenly just hand him over £1 million. Like, it's literally life-changing. The stuff that I'm doing now, it's life-changing for people. And the thing is, 85 to 90% of the stuff I don't put on social media.
Right.
So people don't see what I do, what I'll get up to. Because in the beginning, yes, when I started, I was pumping everything on social media, right? And then I learned the hard way. I started getting court cases after court cases. And, you know, police were just on me. And, you know, and I realized that, you know what, that I can't be doing this. Because if I can either go in prison and then I'm stuffed, because no one's going to look after my family when I'm gone, yeah?
Absolutely.
Or I can keep doing what I'm doing, but I just got to be a bit more smart about it, you know? Right. So I don't post up anything on my social media now. I would probably, if I've got to expose someone a little bit here and there, I would do that. But right. A lot of the work that we're doing, it just stays behind closed doors and we just keep it that way, you know?
Yeah. And after that stuff when you were 15, and you obviously, as we say, educated these undesirable characters, what was the next steps after that? What happened after that? I take it you got a bit of a name for yourself in the area.
Yeah, so as I was explaining before, so I got approached by an organisation at the time who basically had a, how should I explain it? They had, they were in a religious organisation that were trying to stop grooming and conversions and stuff, right? And right. That organization was a Sheria Punjab. And then they've obviously got in touch with me, they've contacted me, and I was introduced to them indirectly.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another, and I was the youngest guy in their crew.
Wow.
I was a 15-year-old boy, and I still remember some of them used to be talking, and they used to be saying, well, bro, what are you bringing him here for? He's 15, you know what I mean? But this 15-year-old boy would be the first one every time we go into a place. Yeah, and we see 15, 20 guys, I'm the one that pull out an axe or I pull out a fucking machete and I start chopping these guys up. You know what I mean? Right. I was the first one always. Or if I didn't have weapons, I'd go in straight, you know, fists on fists, taking down the biggest guy and that, yeah? I was never afraid of anything. To be honest with you, to this day, I've never been afraid of anything. Going back on, remember, I think we were talking about the whole, the suicide thing, we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
I think that was another issue which scared me, is because I wasn't scared of death.
Right.
So to me, if I got to take my life or take someone else's life, it's not an issue because I'm not actually afraid of death. I know when that time comes, it's going to come. It don't really matter how, you know, it's going to come. If your expiry date is written, it's written. There's
you know what, that's you're absolutely bang on. And what I've always found funny is like when people worry about stuff and they go, oh, I'm worried about dying, I'm worried about this, I'm worried about getting cancer. And it's like, if you're meant to die,
it's gonna happen.
It's done. If you're meant to get cancer, it's done. You know, worrying about it isn't gonna stop it happening. Do you know what I mean? So I think you just have to try and live your life. And like you said, sometimes you get a curveball and you have to navigate those roads. But I mean, for you, when you joined this organization, like you said, you were the first one there. I take it you rose the ranks pretty quick.
Oh yeah, very quick. So everybody knows me as Jaspal Sandhu. All my friends, close people. But because I used to do a lot of steroids when I was young.
Is that why you get called Injection?
They all started calling me Injection. So, but that was a name that was within my little circle.
Right.
So they used to call me Injection, right? And then it just sort of, it just got out, you know? And every time something would happen, it'd be like, oh, Injection went and done this, or Injection went and done that. And before you knew it, it was just fucking everywhere, the name. Right. And so I think, until social media come on the scene, everybody who thinks they're hard, yeah, in the Asian community, everyone that thinks they're a bit of a nutter, and I think that's quite common nowadays, yeah, they all had heard of the name, but nobody knew what I looked like. So I used to get people coming up to me and threatening me, saying we're going to call Injection. And like, yeah,
call him.
Yeah, call him, no problem.
I'll have it with him. Yeah.
And then, you know, I still get that to this day, people ringing up my friends saying, oh, they know this and that, we're going to call injection on you. And these are my close mates, you know what I mean? Right. And but my mates are not like that. They're not the type of people who say, yeah, I'll ring up injection right now. Or, you know, they're very humble, but they can have it. Right. You know what I mean?
It's quite funny. Break. It's quite funny though that somebody actually threatened you with yourself.
Yeah. He goes, but I know injection. I was like, yeah, which one?
He said, mate, you don't know who you're dealing with. You don't know who you're dealing with. If I call injection, mate, you're going to be fucking sorry.
People thought I was born in Gravesend, bro. Really? Because when I was on the run in 2002, I was on the run for attempted murder. And what I'd done is I'd done something that most people wouldn't do. So normally when you go on the run, you keep a low profile, you go on yourself, right? I went and I took about 20, 30 guys with me. So I was like, if I'm going to fucking go on the run, and so you lot, right? So we all chipped and we went to Kent. And in Kent, in Gravesend, like, it was a very, it was really established. And, you know, a lot of the Asian communities, they were settled down and they were kind of, the so-called hard men had already made their name.
Fucking rowdy over Gravesend, though, isn't it?
Yeah, see, that's what they think until we come there, you know what I mean? So so they thought they were hard men and they'd made a name. And then these new boys come down, us lot, and they were like, I can understand where they were coming from. Like, who the fuck are these lot? Like, we run this town. Who are these new boys that are coming, yeah? Think they can take over. Yeah, this is our town, you know what I mean? Which is fair enough. And then people start getting hurt, bro. You know, people start getting kidnapped, people start getting tortured, you know, fingers missing and ears missing and shit. Things started happening. And people sort of quick realised that.
So if you take people's fingers and ears, do you like make a necklace or anything?
No, bro, I used to carry a tool bag with me, I'll be honest with you.
Really?
I used to carry a tool bag and I was such a sarcastic fucker, right? I'd open the tool bag up and I'd say, listen, I'm going to torture you, decide what you want me to use.
Wow.
And then,
do you know what? That was very gentlemanly of you. They're actually offering which one do you want?
But then when they wouldn't pick, then I'd do eeny, meeny, miny, moe. You know what I mean? So I'd pick up something and then it would be pliers or it would be a knife or it would be a blowtorch or whatever. You know what I mean? And then
I've never heard anything. I mean, you know, pick a tool, any tool. It's just crazy. But if they said no, then you eeny, meeny, miny, them. Eeny, meeny, miny, them.
I used to take the piss out of these people, bro. Honestly, like. No. I used to take the piss out of them. And to be honest with you, even now to this day, when I walk into places or I walk into a room or whatever, I don't look down at people because I think I'm superior than them, but I look at them and I think, you're not on my level.
Right.
Do you understand? Like, you're normal. I'm not normal. And you're not on my level. So know your place. Do you understand what I'm saying?
And you've heard it here first. Injection is not normal.
No. Fucking crack. Yeah. But, I mean, you've got to be fucking crack to do this shit that I'm doing, you know?
Right.
People are messaging me all the time, bro, why do you do these things? What do you get out of it?
Right.
Like somebody asked me the other day, literally 2 days ago, why do you do this? What do you get out of it?
What's your answer? What'd you say?
It's just me, innit?
Right.
This is me. I'm a man. Right. Like, I come from a bloodline of warriors, bro. You know? Like some of the most famous warriors in history were Sikhs and like our 10th guru and, you know, other warriors, Bandha Singh Bahadur and all these people were warriors. And like I'll give an example. In our religion was only 300 years old. We went into war against the Muslims, against the Mughals for a Hindu religion. The Muslims turned up to India and thought, well, hold on, these guys are fucking idiots. Let's just fucking convert all of them. We'll have a huge religion. It will literally be a fucking jump start, right? And then obviously the Sikhs got involved and we were like, nah, you can't do this to them. They're innocent people.
Right.
So we went to war with them. I mean, you can imagine both our religion had been on. It was about 250 years old at the time our religion was, yeah? Maybe even 200 years. So you can imagine how many generations that is. How many generations is that? And how big do you think our religion would have been? Hardly anything.
Right.
You understand? But we went to war with the Mughals, bro, and we managed to take over most of the Middle East and India, which is something that even when the Americans and the British tried to do, they couldn't even take over Iraq. You understand? Right. We managed to do that. And, you know, I come from that bloodline, and those people, to me, they weren't normal people. They were men.
Yeah.
They were solid men. And to me, in my eyes, a real man is someone that ain't going to stand by and watch someone else getting shafted. You understand what I'm saying? If you're walking down the street and someone's getting fucking robbed, I've seen it before. People just stand there, start making phones, videos. Or they won't get involved. You understand? But then I'd chase the person. And don't get me wrong, there are some people like that that right. would intervene and they would help. And to me, yeah. those are real men.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? So I'm not nothing special, bro. I bleed, you know, I my bones break just like normal humans. I'm not no fucking X-Man, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just a normal human being, you know what I mean? That's all it is.
And when you was in Gravesend, if we just rewind back to when you were still in Southall, obviously you said that it's called Sher-e-Punjab.
Sher-e-Punjab, yeah, which means Lions of Punjab.
Lions of Punjab.
It was an army that was created by one of the Maharaja Ranjit Singh, who was the king of India at the time.
Right, okay. And obviously, like you said, you rose to the top of this organisation. Mm-hmm. The attempted murder you talked about, which made you go out of Gravesend, was that around the same sort of time as you rose to the top of the organisation, or was there some stuff before that?
No, there was stuff before that as well.
Right.
There was a lot of stuff before that. But to be honest with you, it was literally from the age of 15 till around about the age of about 30. So for about 15 years, I'd done a lot of madness. a lot of madness.
And what was the... I mean, obviously, I know you educated them drug dealers for selling drugs to your brother, but what sort of stuff were you doing? Was it debt collection? Was it selling drugs?
We were doing everything. Everything you could possibly think of that is criminal, we were doing it.
Right.
See, the thing is, our organisation wasn't just made up of goody-goody two-shoes.
Right.
Guys with turbans and beards. They were all people with haircuts, trimmed beards, shaves and all that, yeah?
Was the rule of entry that you had to be Sikh or could anybody join?
You had to be Sikh, yeah.
Right, okay.
But we had some Hindus that were with us, Hindu Punjabis as well. You know, there was the odd Muslim here and there.
I just want to ask you something for our viewers, because not all of our viewers will know this, and listeners. Yeah. But when you talk about Sikhs and Hindus, what is the major difference between the two?
That's like me saying to us the difference between a Christian and a Jew.
Right, okay. They both look the same. Okay, so it's religion. It's not...
It's totally different right, religion,
okay.
bro.
So, okay, but do they also wear...
So the Hindus, basically, they believe in millions of gods.
Got it.
Yeah?
Got it.
They believe there's a god for pretty much everything.
I think I've seen... I've seen a friend of mine who's Hindu, yeah. and I've got a friend who's a Sikh, but I didn't go into the actual bits, but I know that they did have lots of different gods, yeah.
So what Sikhs believe, there's only one god.
Okay.
The Muslims... Hindus, Sikhs, Christians, we believe that all of their God that they believe to, that they pray to, is the same God as we believe to, but it's still the same. There is only one God, and every different religion out there is believing in that same one God.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what our personal belief is. But our religion is created with literature and knowledge from all of other religions, all the other religions. Hinduism, Christianity, Islam. So it's basically they've taken out all the good stuff from those religions, and not that there's anything bad in them, you know, but it's just obviously they're different.
Yeah.
And they've put it all in one, and they've created this religion that believes in equality. We don't believe women are different to men. You know, some of the greatest warriors in history, female warriors, were Sikhs.
Wow.
We believe like the women in our religion give birth to kings.
Right.
So that's a very strong belief. Like, you can't disrespect a woman. Like, before Sikhism was created, I'll give you an example. Hinduism, what they used to do is, when the husband would die, they'd reincarnate him, yeah? They'd put him on wooden logs, set him on fire, right? Reincarnate the body. And what they used to do is, they used to burn the wife along with the husband, even if she's alive.
Wow.
Because they used to believe that there's no place in there for the wife if the husband's dead.
Fucking hell, if you was a woman, you'd be fucking pissed at that, wouldn't fucked. You?
So hence why...
Maybe you're getting set fire to tonight. Yeah.
So once a year, the Hindu religion, what they do is they do this thing where they kind of fast for the whole day.
Right.
And then they kind of have this round thing. They look through the moon, at the moon through this thing, and then they won't eat until they see the husband's face first. It just basically means giving the husband a long life.
Got it.
So people of all these years have always thought it's because, no, we genuinely love our husband and we wish him a long life. Right. No. The real reason that happened, the real reason it started from all those years ago, was because if the fucking husband didn't have a long life, the wife would be dead with him.
Right.
If she fucking, do you understand what I'm saying?
So I take it that doesn't happen anymore.
No, so the Sikhs put a stop to it.
Wow.
When the Sikh religion come,
I mean, that
not
is
only
fucking,
stopped it themselves,
dark,
but they stopped the Hindus. Yeah,
he's gone, you're going. I mean, it's like fucking,
So we're very different in many ways. Right. So we believe we're saint soldiers. So we are the most humblest people when you meet us, but...
Until you fuck us about.
You fuck us around and you're fucked, basically.
Right.
You're screwed. Right.
And I mean, in your 15 years of, you know, being around that sort of stuff, what would you say is the worst violence you've seen?
Oh, fucking bro, there's so many, man. I honestly swear to God, right. I've seen everything, man.
Right.
I don't want to mention too much on here, but...
You don't have to give us any names or addresses or any...
I've had people in front of me and I'm cutting up their face open slowly, you know, cutting lips off, nose, ears, just taking my time on people, injecting them to stop, make sure that the blood doesn't clot, so when I'm cutting their fingers off. Yeah, so we had all the instruments and everything ready, all the...
You're not a doctor medical, as well, are you?
We got connections and everything. So, you know, we used to make sure the person does not die. Right. And, you know, we used to torture them. We used to take our time on them, you know. Right. We had made it into... It wasn't just torturing someone. We actually made it into a fucking hobby.
Wow.
You understand? We used to sit there and every time when we used to get taken by them, we used to be like, oh, this time we're kidnapping this person or we're torturing this person. Someone would always pull out a new weapon and say, I want to try this on them.
Wow.
Understand? So we had like literally loads and loads of different things we would try.
Did you whittle it down? So you just had a couple of things that you were your go-to tools or?
Nah, bro. Anything, man. I've literally picked up forks and knives and I fucking torture people with that. I've literally, one guy, I don't want to go into it. I don't want to, because I know the person's going to know who I'm talking about. Right. So. Yeah, I've done some fucked up shit, bro.
Right, okay.
I've done some, I've literally like, you know, when you, there's been some that when you look back at them and you think, I'm...
Maybe that was a bit too extreme.
All the bad things I've experienced in life, I've experienced them because to me, I think it's karma. Because right. I've done a lot of bad things to a lot of people, innocent people as well. You know, there was the odd innocent person that I used to stick it on and I would do it because over the stupidest reasons. Stupidest reasons. Because he's chatting shit behind my back. Or, you know, or he's just stolen like 50 quid off me. It could be of the stupidest reasons. You know what I mean? And sometimes people have got their own issues, you know?
Right.
We don't see that. You know, there could be money problems or it could be like the criminal could have been drunk or said something. I'd literally do some fucked up crazy shit. And sometimes now I think back at it and I think like, you know what? I was a bit messed up. I shouldn't have done that, you know?
Did you ever get nicked by the police? Or would you always manage to keep...
Loads.
Right.
Loads, literally loads, bro. My criminal record's like a fucking yellow pages, bro. Yeah, bad. I tried to apply to go to America, and this was about 10 years ago.
Computer says no.
Yeah, no, they said the earliest I can apply is 40 years' time.
Fucking hell. Yeah. Why is that? Is there like a limitation on the...
I think it probably depends on the crimes and stuff, isn't it? So,
wow.
What they do is they don't, especially America itself, they don't just look at your criminal records, but they look at the intel as well. Towards you. So now, for example, there's a lot of countries that I can't travel to. If I go there, they'll pick me up straight away. So, for example, India. I can't go to India. I'm wanted in India. I wouldn't even say I'm wanted. More like if I go there, they're going to pick me up and I'm going to go missing.
Right.
And this is intel. This has come straight from the embassy.
Wow.
So, you know, we've got our people in certain departments that keep an eye over me.
Is that just because you become a sort of thorn in their side, or is it because you've upset somebody?
No, it's because there was a lot of issues before with the Indian government, and they don't like people who are pro Sikhs or, you know, like Sikh activists or, you know, people that are kind of standing strong.
They want you to be just.
Yeah, they want to take us out, bro.
Right.
The Indian government's been doing that for a long time. They just want to take us out. They want to eliminate the Sikhs because they see us as a threat. They know that we've got that capability of taking India back over again. And at the moment, India is a Hindu country. When our Maharaja died, our king died, the British come, they took over when they opened up the East India Company. And it was only after when the British left, they gave India back, but they didn't give it back to the Sikhs where they got it from. They basically split it up and said, Hindus, you have yours. Sikhs, you have yours. Muslims, you have yours.
Right.
And then...
what could possibly go wrong?
divide and conquer, innit? And then, obviously, that's basically where it all started off from, to be honest with you.
Got it. And did you actually, have you been to jail as well? You had some
a lot, yeah.
Was it, so was this, so when was the first time you actually went to jail? When was that?
About 15, I think it was.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So, you know what it is, but I'll be honest with you. Like, no disrespect to the police around it. They're doing their job. And to be honest with you, a lot of the police officers around here, they're a lot better than if you were to go to countries like Africa, China, India and stuff like that, right? Over there, they're corrupt, even America. But the guys over here, they're on point, they're good. Yes, they sometimes hold personal grudges. It's normal. Yeah. The reason why I'm talking about personal grudges is because from what I know and from what I've seen in this country, if you are a police officer and there is a criminal that is in your radar, and that guy, everybody knows, there's no evidence, but everybody knows that he's a criminal and they know he's up to something, but there's nothing that they could pinpoint on this person, that makes them frustrated. It gets them pissed off. And then every time I used to get remanded, I used to bust case within a month. The case would get dropped. Charges will get dropped after a week or 2 months. But I must have been to prison probably about 100 times probably. Every time I'd go in, I'd get the charges dropped, I'd come out. I think the longest I stayed in prison was when I got sentenced, which was about, I think, 6 years.
Wow.
And, but...
Was that for the attempted murder?
No, that was for something else.
Right, right.
And I got a bus case for that one as well.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's just, do you know what it is? They don't like that. When someone keeps busting cases, they think to themselves, this guy thinks he's invincible.
Do you know what, Jess Pal? You are the Teflon Don, aren't you? I think there was only one other guy like you, and that was John Gotti.
He kept getting away though.
He kept getting off, yeah. And then eventually, obviously, got a long bit of bird. But that attempted murder charge you was talking about, and then you had to go on a run. Was that just because you were told the police are they're looking for you? And that's why you went off?
No, it was fucking all over the news and everything, man. I was on Crime Watch.
Wow.
So, I've been on Crime
Watch.
Did
they use
twice.
A flattering picture of you on there or not?
I don't remember. It was probably just a screenshot mugshot from fucking from the police station.
Right.
But yeah.
And then you went over to Gravesend. Obviously, you had a bit of fun over there.
Those guys there, they thought we're little kids, innit? So we've turned up there. We started taking out all the big boys. I'm not going to lie to you, a lot of them, they still put up a fight.
Yeah.
You know, they still, in their own mind, thought, no, we're still gangsters. But I think eventually they sort of realised that they're fighting a losing battle.
Right.
There's too many of us, bro.
Yeah.
Too many. It's ridiculous.
So if you're rolling up with 30 fellas, that's a big firm, right?
Oh, that's nothing. Honestly, like literally, there was a video that's just come out the other day. I actually made a video about it today, which I'll probably upload in a couple of days, where there's a guy, he's quite big on TikTok, a bit of an influencer. He's basically made a video saying that his life's in danger, and he's gone to the US embassy, American embassy, the British embassy, and the Indian embassy asking for help, yeah? And basically saying that I'm trying to kill him, and that I've got over 100,000 members in my organization. And I wish I had 100,000, but yeah, I mean, we do have a lot.
Great story, mate.
Yeah, we do have a lot. Yeah, we do have a lot, but
yeah.
I wish it was 100,000. But, you know, he's asking for help, saying they're going to kill me and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking,
do you think he's just chasing clout? He's trying to get likes?
A lot of these people do, mate. You know, I've had so many people. One of those guys we were talking about, I'm not going to mention his name, the one I said to you, my boys nearly slapped up the other day, yeah, at the station.
Yeah.
So he's come on, I think he's done a podcast with you. I'm not going to mention any names, yeah? So, but what it is, this is what I'm trying to say, is a lot of people, they come on social media and they've got that front on that they're gangsters and that they're this and that, yeah? But it's just all one big game, you understand? It's all one big social media publicity stunt, yeah? And the same with these guys, you know, they're just clout chasers.
Right.
This is all they do. They come on social media, they just want big followers, and, you know, what are they going to get out of it? I don't understand.
Yeah,
a lot of these fake gangsters, bro.
I suppose the problem is that they do get the clout, the likes, the following, whatever. But then, obviously, when it does actually comes
down to it, bro. This guy, the one that we were talking about, yeah. Right. I know you're watching, bro, and you know what I'm talking about, yeah.
So
this guy, you tried giving it all that, yeah. because he tried to get a bit of an Indian following behind his name, right? So what I done is I just sent people down to his yard, bro. They drove 8 hours to his yard and just smashed up his mum and dad's house, smashed up his house, yeah? And then the next day he put on a Sherdeh Punjab t-shirt saying, yeah, I'm Sherdeh Punjab, just trying to arse-lick us.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying, yeah? So these
can you get me one of those t-shirts?
Yeah, no problem, bro. It's my brand, innit? So we'll get that, no problem.
Love it.
But yeah, these guys are waste mans, bro. They're all hype talkers. They're not real men. Like I was saying before, 85-90% of the stuff that I do, I don't put it on social media, bro.
Right.
You understand? I try and stay under the radar as much as I can now.
And you mentioned earlier about, you know, one of the big things that you're trying to eradicate is obviously any problems where people are like grooming kids and getting rid of these sort of like child molesters and stuff.
Mm.
And I think anybody watching this or listening to this podcast will, you know, there's no, I know that, you know, the sort of left wing people say, oh, it's an illness and all this stuff. And, you know, that they just need counselling and they need help. But you know, as a father, I don't think there's anything remotely normal about, you know, people messing around with underage children. I don't think there's anything normal about it. So I applaud, obviously, you for stepping up and doing that. There's a lot of people I know who, there's a lot of these other people, you know, there's actually organisations that go onto social media to try and trap these people.
We do that as well.
So
we've got loads of profiles set up, fake profiles, where we catch these people. A lot. I mean, there's an organisation that I work closely with called Seek Youth. They do a lot of that. These guys, hats off to them, and they do a lot of good work like that.
And have you got anything you could sort of share with us, like a real life case of? I mean, you have to name any names, but just of something that's happened where, you know, and how these people do these things. Because obviously, anybody who's got young, the problem I think for a lot of parents now is a lot of children are adopting social media and phones and iPads and the internet early on. So obviously, if they're aware of some of these things that these people do, it'd be good for them to like be able to educate their children. So, I mean, if you could share maybe a story.
What normally happens, this is the ongoing issue that I see a lot of the times, yeah? Parents are too busy working. And a lot of this is happening from families who have recently come from India, okay? When I say recently, I say within the last 15 years. Right. And then they've got kids that are brought up in this country, they're born in this country, but they were born in India, so their mentality is a little bit backwards. And so all they're doing is concentrating on work, trying to put food on the table, trying to make sure there's enough money, because where they've come from back home, financially they were quite not so well off, you understand, quite poor. So they're just basically trying to make enough money to pay off the loans that they've taken to come down here and also create some kind of base, some kind of life for their future generation, you know, to be here, right? And so they're working so hard. What ends up happening is they don't concentrate on their kids enough, and they'll just give them an iPhone or an iPad and just say, sit on the computer all day. And they just think, okay, my kids are at home, it's okay. As long as they're at home, it's fine. We're working, you know, but they don't know how to keep tabs on these kids when it comes to social media, checking their phone histories and bits and bobs and, you know, their iPad histories and, you know, like all that kind of stuff, tablet history, right? And these kids are drifting off. And a lot of issues that I'm seeing as well, this is one of the big issues, is where within the Indian community, it's quite big that they love to drink, yeah? Especially the men. The men love to drink. They come home, they beat their wives up or whatever, they're kicking off, right? And there's tension within the house. So where there's tension within the house, these kids are now growing up with tension, and all they're ever seeing is tension all the time. So then someone comes along, yeah, at school, or one of their friends or whatever, shows them a bit of love, shows them a bit of potential like that. I was telling you about that 62-year-old guy who tried grooming the 11-year-old girl, yeah? He knew she had family issues, and he basically started saying a few times, why don't you come around? And he said to him, I'll babysit her and all that kind of stuff or whatever. Yeah, when you log out or whatever. He started slowly grooming her. For Christmas, he bought her a gift, bought her a phone, yeah, with a SIM card and everything. The parents didn't know what's what. They just thought he's given her a phone. They didn't know he's on a contract or whatever. So he had her phone number now. Yeah, so, you know, he was communicating with her. And in the beginning, it was just like, hey, how are you doing? You okay? If you need anything, let me know. You know, just keeping it very simple. And then it just got worse and worse. And then these guys, what they do is they show these kids something that these kids haven't seen before, which is love and affection. And when you're coming from a family which is just crazy and suddenly you, over here you've got someone showing you love.
And I suppose it's not just, and it's not just like an Indian community. It's all communities.
Because
everybody's, yeah. You know, majority of people, like you said, struggle because they're working, they're trying to put food on the table. And if the kids are neglected, like you said, and feel like they're missing out, and then someone, and that's a weapon you find that they use. They show
they
love.
They know what they're looking for.
To sort of draw them
These groomers know what they're looking for, bro. They know exactly what to look for. They see it. And then they give that kid exactly what they want. And then they've lured them in. You understand? Me personally, I think they should be killed. These people need to be killed because, look, we go by the law, yeah? But who's created this law? It's man-made law. We're living in a country where it's a man-made law that we're living in. But if we were to live by the law of the land, these people, if this was 1,000 years ago or 500 years ago and someone had done something like this, they would be hanged up on a fucking tree and burnt alive. You understand what I'm saying?
I'm just laughing because... It's like fucking crazy, but you know, and people that have been, you know, if they've not got children,
they don't know what we're talking about.
They won't understand it. But if you've got children, if you love your kids, and somebody did that to one of your kids, people would actually, and it sounds controversial, but they would actually agree with you, and they go, do you know what? If someone done that to my fucking kid and someone said, well, that's what's going to happen to him, I don't think anybody would be upset about it.
But then again, there's some people out there that have kids. They don't deserve them, bro.
No, but I think, you know, obviously, if you actually did hang someone up and kill him, it might be seen as being a bit extreme in this country, only because, obviously, we don't do that anymore. But you know, I don't think the penalties... for that behaviour are severe enough as a deterrent.
Bro, you get about 3-4 years in prison.
Right.
When I was in prison...
And you go on the wing, don't you? Yeah. So you can go, what's it called, the nines?
The numbers.
The numbers.
The numbers. Numbers. So when you're on the numbers, it means you're basically on the nonsense wing and that, yeah?
Right.
And when you're, like, all the prisons I've been to, their nonsense wings, they're different. These guys, they're treated like fucking kings in there. They got their own separate wing. They don't mix with the general population. They're allowed to keep fucking parrots and shit in their fucking cells. They've got fucking PlayStations and all that. They've got their own kitchens and all that. And what they try to do is they try to come across the whole, human rights angle, where, oh, it's against their human rights if they're locked up and segregated from everyone else. They should be able to give their, they should have their own access to their own kitchens. And, and like, bro, they got it fucking large, man. They live in it large.
So not only are the actual sentences...
ridiculous, but yes.
Light.
Yeah.
But when they're living like kings inside. Go in jail, it's not really a prison.
Bro, look, downside to them is when they're coming out, they're on the sex offenders register for life. But who gives it? Do you think these guys give a fuck? They don't give a shit, bro.
Well, also, I mean, how many people will actually go on there and have a look and see who's on it?
But they just change their name over. Or like, you've seen so many cases, they've changed their name and there's been loopholes and no one's figured it out. Or they've changed their sex.
Wow.
Like that guy, there was one case that I saw only the other day. He got done for rape. And what he done is he changed his sex over to a female. So when they sentenced him, they sent this guy into a woman's prison and he's in for rape.
So I mean, what could possibly go wrong? It's just fucking insane.
Oh, mate, this system's a joke, bro.
Wow.
This system's a joke.
I mean, all the, you know, genuinely.
This is where we come in.
Right. Who are you going to call? Injection.
<Yeah.
laughs> So obviously when you, please tell me that when you find these people, you don't hang them up and execute them. There's not people hanging from lampposts in South Wales.
We just talk to these people. We just try and put some sense into them.
Right.
Yeah, that's what we do.
So like, obviously if you come across this happening, but that's that they give them gifts, they share them with love. Mm. They become the father figure, the friend or whatever. And then, I mean, do they, when you say they're groom, I take it they're doing it gradually.
Slowly.
And then it progresses obviously into a sexual thing.
Do you know what a lot of other cases that we're getting is a lot of kebab shop owners, taxi drivers and all that. They're meeting all these young girls and I'm talking teenagers, right? 15, 16 years old. And at this time, at this point, they've got no jobs, no nothing. They've got no money coming in, yeah?
Right.
They want to live it large, but there's no money there. So they started doing them favors. Oh, you can come and eat here, get all the takeaway you want. Come right. and chill in the back with us. We'll have some drinks, all the bottles,
right.
whatever. Yeah. So these girls are thinking, we're fucking living it, man. We've got free food, we got free alcohol. Then on top of that, they give them free lifts in the taxis or whatever, wherever they want to go. In return, they ask for favors.
Right.
That's another thing that we're having to deal with. But then in this particular situation, the girls know exactly what's going on.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying? So then what do you do? Do you blame the girl or do you blame the guy? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I suppose the problem is, like you said, when you're 15, 16, 17 years of age and, you know, you probably just got a little bit of money coming in from a part-time job and then someone says, oh, come and have a drink with us and come and have a laugh with us and blah, blah. It's the same sort of thing as grooming, but it becomes a little bit different because then they want to hang out, you know. Oh,
it's
yeah.
a different type. It's still grooming, but it's a different way.
Different type.
It's like, it's not like paedophilia kind of grooming. It's more like kind of what they're doing is they're manipulating the person. They're playing mind games with them and they're slowly bringing them in.
Right.
But it's just dirty, man, the way people are rolling right now. And you know what, bro? I'll be honest with you. I get a lot of haters, yeah?
Right.
And I was talking to Manny about this as well. You see, the thing is with me, I generally don't give a shit, bro.
Right.
Like, I get people that will message saying, why are you doing this? Or why don't you keep out of this? But then when someone lands down their yard, kicks off their front door or breaks into their house and takes their car or robs their grandmum or whatever, yeah? Then the first person they contact is me. and I've had this before where I've had messages, because obviously on social media, you've got the message history, yeah? Mm. Of when the previous messages they've sent. And then I've had someone message me about a month ago saying, bro, I got this issue. Someone came onto my driveway and nicked my car.
Wow.
Can you do me a favor? Can you find out who it is? And I looked at the previous messages, yeah? And the guy is basically messaging me saying, bro, you're such a hype man. You know, why are you always getting involved in people's fucking business? Mind your own business. So I fucking...
You messaged back, and I'm on my own business on this occasion.
That's what I said. I said, I'm on my own business, bro. Look at your messages above, fuck yourself. And that's it. But I get this all the time, bro. Do you understand what I'm saying? A lot of the times, the people that are haters are people that I've hurt over the years.
Right.
I have a lot of people. Right. And I'll be honest with you. And whether I'm proud of it or not, a lot of them, to be honest with you, they did deserve it. 99.9% of them deserved it. So, you know, they got what they deserved. Yes, I shouldn't have done it in the way that I should have. I could have changed it, but then I wouldn't be where I am today if I did. And I wouldn't be making changes in other people's lives if I had a bit of a soft approach to things. You understand? But
And you obviously said earlier that you had a 6-year stint in prison.
Hmm.
What was that for?
That was for blackmail, kidnapping, firearms, but they run it all concurrent.
Got it.
I think the highest one was the blackmail, which was 6 years, and then I had to serve the 6.
Wow.
And
obviously when you, like you said before, you beat a lot of the cases and you got found not guilty, but this one, when you actually had 6 years, What was it actually like when you realised, actually, I can't actually get out of this? I'm actually got to sit here now for...
Well, to be honest with you, I was looking at more. They done a deal with me, the police, the CPS, done a deal. And they said, if you go guilty, we'll give you 11 or 13 years, I think it was.
Wow.
If I went guilty.
Wow.
And...
what was you looking at if you hadn't gone guilty?
They were saying it's double figures. So
it would have been
15, 16 years.
Life. Yeah.
And... So I didn't go guilty. I fought it all the way. And we ended up getting 6 years, you know. That's probably, if there's one thing that I could change about everything that I've done in my past, if I could change the one thing, it would be that particular case.
But you did go guilty.
No. I wish I hadn't done what I had done to get myself in that place. Not because of the prison sentence, but it was just the whole case. It was very personal, you know, I think I dealt with it in the wrong way. I don't want to obviously talk about it too much on here, but I genuinely wish I dealt with it in a different way because I think I was a very different person then. My anger would take over and I was easy to manipulate.
Right.
A lot of people that were in my circle, they fully used me, man, fully used me. You know, they'd sit there and they'll basically just spend, all it would take is literally just 5 minutes. Hold on one second. All it is just literally 5 minutes of just them filling something negative into my head. And straight away, I'll be so like,
it was literally like light in the fucking
That's all
flame,
it was, bro. I was like, so easy to brainwash, and I was gullible, you understand? And with me, a lot of it was just brute force. There wasn't enough brain activity. Now, I sit there and I analyze everything before I do it. And, you know, when people are talking to me and they're trying to fill my head up and I'm listening and I'm thinking, okay, yeah. mate, it might take me about 5-10 minutes, but I'll confront them and say, listen, bro, you're talking shit. You're trying to play fast with me now.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then, but you see with me, bro, I think, remember when we spoke on the phone as well, I said it to you the first time, I go, I'm a very simple guy, bro. Either yes or no type of guy. I'm either very happy or I'm your worst nightmare. There's no in between with me, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm either friends with someone or I just lock them off. Before I'd lock them off and the way I would lock them off is I would build up a hatred in my head for that person. And it would be easier for me to get over it if I was to just build up hatred. But now I've just learned to just literally just lock these people off out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
And I just find it's a lot easier.
And when you was in jail, what was it like in jail? Do you have any aggravation when you was in there or was it?
No, I was good, man.
All right. So you had a few friends in there and...
You know, it was funny. I was actually literally just thinking about it about 3 days ago. And when I was in prison, bro, my thinking was so different. It's exactly how it was now, but it's different to everyone else. So I remember one example. I was, what prison was I in? I was in, somewhere in Kent, Isle of Sheppey, I think it was, yeah? And so I was there. And I'm walking down the pathway to the gym and I see about 5-6 guys, black guys, and they're kicking off with this white guy.
Yeah.
And this white guy is quite tall, solid guy, yeah? You could tell he's quite solid. And these 5 guys, they got their trousers hanging around their ankles and, you know, just typical normal, yeah? Thugs and that, right? And so they're basically trying to stick it on him. I'm on my own. And I've gone up to them and I'm like, what's going on, mate? And they're looking at me, they're like, what? What's wrong? I go to them, I said, listen, I said, it's 4 or 5 of you lot and it's one of him. Yeah? I said, are you lot fucking that fucking brave? You that much of men that it takes this many guys to have it with one guy? I said, why don't you do this? I said, me and him here now. I said, come on, let's have it. I didn't even know this guy, bro.
Right.
For all I know, he could have been a fucking wrong one, bro.
Right.
Could have been a nuts. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know what the ins and outs of it was. Maybe there was some kind of issue going on previously about their court case. There could have been Cody's. I don't know. And I just see this one guy, they're sticking on him, and I'm thinking, he's on his own.
Wow.
Like, so I've gone up to him, I said, let's have it. And I ended up going to war with these guys. I didn't realize they were called something AK a group or something, yeah?
Huh.
In prison they were. And it was quite a lot of them. There was about 50, 60 of them. So I went to war with them. But they didn't realize that all the Indians that were in that prison were all standing with me as well.
Right.
So I was like their boss.
Right.
You understand? So the governor used to sit with me in the office every time there was some issue. And he used to say to me, look, bro, this is the situation. Please, can it be dealt with? Can it be controlled? They used to talk to me about everything. He used to go, every single thing that involved any Asians would go through me because they knew I controlled the whole, you know what I mean, the scene, yeah? And then, but that situation, nothing come of it. A few times I've seen them and I just said to them, if you want it, let's have it. And that, yeah, they didn't want to do nothing, bro, you know? So, I mean, I took a lot of things for granted in prison. It's a naughty place, bro. I've seen people literally get their faces cut open over a 2-stick Kit Kat. You know, at that time, I remember it was 12 pence when I was in Scrubs, yeah?
Right.
You get the 2-stick Kit Kat, yeah? And just for the foil, the guy wanted the foil. The other guy didn't give him the foil. So what he done is he went into his fucking showers when he was having a shower and he had a blade on the toothbrush, right? Melted on, just carved him open. Just over a fucking Kit Kat, bro. 12 pence Kit Kat.
Fucking carved that for a 12p Kit Kat. I mean, that is fucking
but
crazy.
In I think one of the last podcasts we done, we were speaking about my time in prison and... And a lot of people won't understand this because I've seen a few of the comments that people wrote underneath and they're thinking, whatever, man. But until you've been there,
right.
You won't know. Like, when I was in Scrubs, at that time, there was a shortage of staff.
Right.
So people used to get let out for showers every 3 or 4 days.
Right.
Right. And so we'd, it was literally 23-hour, it wasn't even 23-hour bang up, it was 24-hour bang up.
Wow.
We used to go in there, get our food at the servery, go straight back in ourselves. Yeah. Evening time, lunchtime, go and get our food back in ourselves. Yeah. There was no showers. Showers was once every 3-4 days. And we had it good because at that time, Scrubs was being investigated for a lot of crimes against prisoners. So what they were doing, these lot, the way they were rolling that, if you see some of the officers in there, bro, they're fucking beasts, bro. They're lumps, you know what I mean, yeah? And so you go in there, and if you mess with the officers, they literally tie you up and smash you in your cell. They smash you in, bro. And I think one murder happened there, or somebody died, or I don't know what it was, yeah? They started to get investigated, and then they started putting the cameras up there and everywhere. And so where they were, there was a lot of heat on them. They had to be very careful. So I used to see officers standing there just doing their jobs, and the prisoners would come, they'd throw food at their face, they'd spit in their face, and they'd kick off. And a lot of them were Jamaicans, right. Rastas, yeah? And so they would, what they started to realize is we had our own personal beef with a lot of these Rastas in prison. And we worked on a servery. They used to call us Lahori Gurai, which is, it's basically, it's a lot of Indian restaurants around our areas, they call them Lahori Gurai. So it's an Indian, right. It's an Indian familiar right. name, right? Right? So they called that kitchen Lahori Gurai because they thought, oh, it's all Indians working there, right? And the people that were working there with us, they weren't idiots. Right. There were a lot of known, well-established drug dealers, gangsters from local areas. So all the local hardmen, we knew each other.
Yeah.
So we were all working there behind the servery. And people would come in, and if you ain't filled in your form, your dinner ticket thing, which you'd get, I think it was on a Saturday or something, and if you don't fill it in by Sunday and hand it in, when you don't choose your meal, what you're going to get, you'll get a standard option, which is a 4. So standard option 4 would be something like sausages and mash, yeah? It'd be something very simple, where all the other options could be chicken and rice and pies or whatever, yeah? And so a lot of these people, a lot of these Jamaicans, they'd be blazing all night. By the time it comes in the morning, but you have to put your ticket in before 9 o'clock, they'd still be asleep. So they forget. So they kick off. Oh, no, I don't fucking want this. And they throw the food in our faces and shit, yeah? Then what started happening is the officers started realizing that these same people that were kicking off with us, literally a couple of hours later, they were getting smashed in their cells,
wow.
like getting carved open. So they put 2 and 2 together, and I think the word got around and they realized these guys, they're basically not having it, yeah? So what started happening is they started putting, I started getting letters, notes under my fucking door, basically with a prison name, prison's name, and the prison a cell number, right? So in the beginning, I was like, nah, what is this? Like, what's going on here? It's happened 2-3 times, yeah? And then I looked through the peephole, where you got the peephole, and there used to be a little dot right in the middle, yeah? And I used to look through that little dot because the peephole would be closed, and I see he's an officer. Then I approached the officer afterwards, and I go, look, what's going on? I go, you posted this in my thing, yeah? And he goes, look, he goes, I just need you to deal with it. I go, all right, cool, done. I said, but just make sure you look after us as well, yeah? He goes, done, no problem. So we were working side by side inside. I guess I wouldn't even call it as, some people say, oh, you lot are working as screws or whatever. You're working as prison officers. Nah, those prison officers weren't prison officers. They were fucking gangsters, bro. Yeah, so if anything, I saw it as 2 crews getting together and just sticking it on these wastemans. You know what I mean? So they give us a cell name and number and all that. We go in, a couple of guys outside, yeah, waiting outside, keeping an eye. And at this point now, the officers would have our back. They'll make sure nothing gets reported.
So they were walking around going...
Yeah, exactly. We'll go in there.
Right.
One guy's keeping an eye out. We'll go in there, put a pillow case over the guy's head. And at that time, we had the chili sauce bottles, the Incona chili sauce bottles in cells. We smash them open, just stab them up in their faces.
Wow.
So we'll literally do it while they're sleeping. They won't know who's done it. We'll stick the thing pillow over their head, stab them up in their faces, and we'll chip. And that started happening. Started happening quite often. And what they started to do in return, they'd leave us open. Everyone else was banged up. We'll be having showers. We'll be out on the fucking landing playing pool on the pool tables and stuff, yeah? Till about 9 o'clock. The governor, they used to let me in the governor's office, bro. in the actual governor's office let me in to make all my personal phone calls. Wow. And people, I've seen people write about this on the comments and that, yeah? And they'll write, yeah, whatever, bro, what you think, you're some kind of gangster. Listen, unless you know, those people that were in prison with me know exactly how we were rolling. Right. Unless you know, you ain't got a clue. Half of these people that are commenting on these posts, bro, these guys are average people, man. These guys are average people that ain't got a clue, bro. They've probably never even gone to a fucking restaurant and even got 10% discount, yeah? Right? Because right? They're just normal people. No one gives a shit about these people, yeah? But when you're a somebody and you're looking after the prison system's going to look after you, bro. Right. We used to sit there. We used to make phone calls and whatnot to whoever we want. Yeah, chilling out. We used to have unlimited phone calls. We used to have a mobile phone in the cell. They brought at that time, we managed to get, there was only one video player. What do you call it? VHS. And so they only had one in the library and no one used to use it. So what they've done is they gave it to us in our cell. Okay. So what we used to do is, every time on a Sunday when EastEnders will be on the omnibus, yeah, we'd record it, right? we'd record it while we're on the servery, and then we'll come back and watch it. You know, silly little things like that, right. Yeah? And it was handy, bro. So now you think about it, you think, what? But when you're in prison, these little things count. You know, yeah. We had a PlayStation in there, PlayStation 1 at the time they had, yeah?
I remember getting one, and they were the ones, weren't they?
So, like, you know, these little things like having a remote control bro, for your TV and then being able to have teletext on your fucking TV because no one had a remote control, let alone teletext.
And most of the people watching probably won't have a fucking clue what teletext was.
Teletext, so guys, so for those of you that don't know, yeah, you lot are so much engrossed into WhatsApp and Facebook and all that. Teletext was basically, you know, like how you go into hotels, for example, and you go on to the options where it says menu and listings of all the movies, yeah? So it's something similar to that, but it was basically everything that you could possibly think of, news reports, everything, but on your remote control on your TV. And they used to have this page on there. I think it was 444 or 888, or I don't know, 888 was subtitles. It was 444, something like that. And on that page was, it was live messages on there. Right. So you can phone up and leave messages. So what used to happen is all my friends and family would then know at 10 o'clock, as soon as it is 10 o'clock, that I'd be online and I'd be watching on my TV, yeah? And then there'd be all these messages coming on from everyone. Hey, bro, how you doing?
Just, I mean, this was kind of like the internet, but on TV, the internet really got going. But I remember you used to be able to book holidays on teletext.
Yes. You used to be able to do that.
And I remember at the time thinking, this is fucking amazing. But it was, when you look back at it now, it was just so...
They're old now, bro.
Yeah. It's like if you've got a PlayStation now and you played a PlayStation 1 then, you'd be like, wow.
No, yeah. I think they've got, I don't know what PlayStation they've got now, but I'm looking back. My mate goes to me and goes, I've got one, take it. I go, I wouldn't even have to use it, bro. Right. There's so many facilities on the internet and this and that, I wouldn't know how to use it. I'm just a normal, give me a PlayStation 2, I'm happy with that, you know what I mean? But yeah, so going back on the whole... we were talking a bit before about the path that I'd gone into and where it ended up, yeah? So what we were speaking about earlier on, obviously I'll say it in front of the camera as well, my life all changed around. Everything, all of this whole craziness just changed around.
Is that when you come out of jail?
I'd come out of jail. I was married. I got married about, I think it was about 4 months before. Ended up in prison, spent most of my married life in prison.
Right.
Come outside, had a little one, and separated. I then met someone, okay, who I was supposed to get married to. She unfortunately passed away. When she passed away, as I was explaining to you before, I ended up in depression quite bad. Severe depression. Like you're talking to me now and you think this is jazz. When you were talking to me before, it was like I was there, but I really wasn't there, if that makes sense. Have you ever come across anyone like that?
You're talking to them, a lot of people who've suffered with depression, unless you've actually gone through it, you don't actually know. But it, like you said, it's like you're there, but you're not.
There's two types, Paul. You've got depression, which is where you can clearly see it. This guy is not right in the head. And then you've got depression, which is someone that will be sitting in his room here, laughing their head off, so happy, everything's normal. And then literally 15 minutes later, they've hanged themselves. Because when that grey cloud comes over your head, it doesn't matter how happy you've been 15 minutes prior to that, or how happy you've been 2 weeks prior to that. When that grey cloud comes, every single thing that in your life that matters doesn't matter. Right. Your kids, your money status, you know, your job, your health, all of that is just gone. Because everything just feels like shit, yeah? Right. And when everything feels like shit, you don't want to be around. So I was experiencing both. I was not only a zombie, I was walking around like just out of my nut, right? And you couldn't even have a conversation with me. But at the same time, I was also, one minute I'd be happy because my friends and family, everyone was
so,
trying.
So what was you taking then that made you like that?
Nothing.
I was just
depressed, bro.
It just grabbed hold of you.
Yeah, I was really bad. And like, I tried killing myself multiple times. I took an overdose once. So I'll give you an example. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with ephedrine.
Yeah.
Ephedrine, a lot of people now use it to mix with cocaine, but then it was used for, a lot of bodybuilders use it for
training,
fat burning.
Yeah.
And they say two tablets is sort of maximum, four is kind of borderline dangerous, yeah? They wouldn't recommend, especially if it was the 0.4 MCG ones. And so what happened is I took 126 of those.
Fucking hell.
I took two packets of sleeping tablets. I took about, I think it was two packs of caffeine tablets. I literally, whatever was in the fucking cupboard, bro. I downed it.
Is that just because at that point, Jasper, you just decided you wanted to fucking check out?
I didn't want to be here, bro. She'd gone and she was everything I had. I didn't want to be around, bro. I wanted to be with her. And nothing mattered, bro. I had kids. I had a good family. Everything was good. Nothing mattered, bro. I didn't want to be around. I just wanted to be with her. And all I kept thinking is, she's only been gone a couple of days. I need to, before, like, I saw her visually in my head, I saw her as a spirit that's slowly going away. And I need to catch up with her quickly before she's gone too far. And so I done what I did, 2 liters of alcohol, sat there, I made a video to all my family and friends, my kids, my ex-wife, my parents, to the police, to her family. I made a video for every single person. I even made one for the police saying that do not arrest my friends or anyone, because my friends were sleeping upstairs. Because I told them, I said, look, I need to go back to her place and just stay the night there. So they came with me just to keep an eye out, yeah? And they were all sleeping upstairs.
Yeah.
And I didn't want them to get picked up, yeah? Right. The same way I did. And so I made a video for everyone and I done what I'd done. Next thing you know, when I rang my ex-wife up to let her know, I said, I'm sorry for everything and blah, blah, blah. And then I cut the phone off. When I cut the phone off, switched my phone off, I didn't think she had no way of contacting the guys upstairs because she didn't even know them.
Right.
She ended up bringing up one of my mates who sort of knew them. He made a few phone calls. They ended up finding out. Next thing you know, ambulance is knocking on the door. I'm sitting there on the sofa. And ambulance is there, and I still remember he was a young lad, and he was a woman, and he was like, look, you need to come with us, mate. And I said, no, I ain't getting nowhere. He goes, listen, mate, you ain't got a choice. He goes, you're coming with us, yeah? So I said, yeah. I said, fucking touch me, bro. I said, watch what I fucking do to you, yeah? That's all I remember. After that, I just remember just waking up in hospital.
Wow.
And
what did it feel like when you, taking all that amount of stuff, did you just feel like it was going?
I felt relieved, bro.
Right.
I sat there and I was happy, you know. I was genuinely happy because I was like, you know what? I'm going to be free. And this is what a lot of people don't understand. You see all these people doing suicides and all that, yeah? And you're thinking, what must be going through the head? You know, these people, when they've made that choice, they're genuinely freeing themselves. They're being happy, they're happy, they're going happy. They're not going sad. Very rare cases you'll see people that are sad and they've committed suicide because they're sad or, you know, because the kids are taken away from them or whatever, yeah? But majority of the times, these people that have got long-term mental health issues and stuff, they are happy to go, you understand?
I mean, obviously, thank God, you know, you were saved in time and I take it they just pumped your stomach and... You know,
well, the doctor goes, he goes, in 26 years, he goes, I've never seen this. He goes, I don't know how you're still alive. He goes, your heart was literally going to pop out of your chest. Wow. He goes, I really don't know how you're still alive. And then after that, I tried multiple times again. I tried injecting 10 mil syringe full of air straight into my chest. That would have killed anyone straight away because once the air circulates through your heart,
you're fucked.
You're fucked, yeah. I didn't even fucking flinch, bro. Yeah, I didn't feel anything. Then, for all I know, it's probably still in there somewhere. Yeah, the
air pocket. Think God didn't want you to check out.
That's what's happened.
I think so, he was like, you're not going yet. Yeah. You've got work to do.
So I started contacting a lot of mediums at the time because I wanted to know exactly how she passed away. I wanted to know, you know, I wanted to communicate with her because she'd gone, right? And every time I'd go there, I mean, they wouldn't know anything about what's going on. Right. But every time I went, they gave me the same message. What are you doing? Don't do it. Don't do it. And the reason why she's not allowing you to come yet is because you've got a greater purpose in life. They kept saying that to me. And I got so fucking fed up, bro. And I'm like, what is this greater purpose? What's this greater purpose that I'm supposed to have? Like, I don't understand. Like, I'm a fucking idiot. I'm a bum.
Do you know what it was? I reckon it's so that you could come on my podcast.
That's probably what it was.
We got you. Yeah, yeah. But no, to actually get the, to be told that, and to have tried to obviously kill yourself multiple times, there must have been, I mean, I am a spiritual person, so I do actually buy into that, that there is a plan. And if the plan's not to go yet, then you can jump out of a fucking building and you'll land on a fucking mattress and you'll be like, who fucking put that there?
But this is what I couldn't understand. They were all telling me that this is your path. And I was getting frustrated. I was like, what greater purpose is there? What, I couldn't figure it out.
Right.
And then it just hit me, bro, one day. And I'm like, it was like a vision in my head. And I was like, I can do this. Right. Why don't I just twist it around? I can still fuck people up.
Right.
I can just do it in a way where I just, you know what I mean? I'm doing it for the right reason.
Was that understand? Was that the moment when you decided to become that Robin Hood character?
Yeah.
So so it's funny, isn't it? Because you go through that, you know, what most people would say is madness, and you've gone into jail, you've got arrested, you've obviously dabbled in every organised crime option available, and then obviously you've had that terrible trauma where you've lost, you know, the love of your life. You've obviously then tried to check out. You've not been allowed to check out. And, you know, if somebody, I mean, obviously some people aren't as lucky as you where if they do commit suicide, they may just go. But, I mean, if anybody's watching this and they was having those sort of dark thoughts or whatever, and bearing in mind what you've been through, what advice would you actually say to somebody, you know, speak to somebody or reach out?
Honestly, bro. I went through that path of speaking to someone. I went to these shrinks or whatever, yeah, counselling, yeah. Worst decision I ever made. And I'm not saying all these counsellors or whatever they are.
But it's not one size fits all, is it? Sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't.
But maybe I just ended up with the wrong one. We ended up having, I was sitting there with her and I'm fucking crying my eyes out and I'm telling her exactly what happened and I'm getting to the point where I'm saying to her, the ambulance had took them 2.5 hours to come because of the snow was so bad. And she was literally dying in front of me and I couldn't do anything. And you know, I was pouring my eyes out. I was going crazy. And out of nowhere, she was like, okay, I'm going to have to cut you there. Then we're finished now. I'm like, didn't even tell me 5 minutes notice or 10 minutes notice. Like, to me, at that point, I realized you're only in it for the fucking money. You want your money and you want to fuck off home. You could have easily have let me finish my story and give it an extra 2-3 minutes and then say, okay, Jasper, it's fine.
I mean, that's mad. I mean, most people... You know, when you're with them and you're grieving and you're being counseled,
that's their job.
You sit, if you're there for fucking 3 hours, you're there for 3 hours. You're not on the clock. I mean,
So that pissed me off. And then it was, when I walked out of there, I remember sitting in the crying, I was crying my eyes out. But at the same time, I had so much anger and aggression. And I was like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going to deal with this myself. And I did. Right. And, you know, I went through a lot of self-healing classes through the mediums that I'd met. And to be honest with you, bro, and this is the first time I'm actually going to say this on record, yeah. A lot of people don't know this, but I actually practiced mediumship.
Right.
Okay. Reason why I done that is because I wanted to be able to start communicating with my partner myself.
Right.
And I was always told every time I used to get my readings done, you've got a third eye. And one day after hearing it about 15 times, I said to the lady, I said, look, you lot keep saying I've got a third eye. What the hell does this mean? And they explained that basically you've got a gift where you can see things as well, yeah? So I then followed that.
Yeah.
I started practicing and I was actually quite good. But then I stopped and I think that has helped me in life a lot because when I'm sitting in a room, I can see the other person's energy.
Right.
And I don't know if that person's a waste man or not. Right. You understand? Like when I spoke to you on the phone, bro, the first time, I saw your energy. I felt your energy through our communication. And I thought, this guy's cool. Yeah. He's on the level.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's a street level, but he's cool. Yeah. And I've met loads of people that people have tried to introduce me to certain people or meet this guy. I just lock them off. I'm like, nah. So I know their energy is just different. And I know when someone wants to talk to you because they've got like another motive. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah?
Yeah.
It's not about that. I just try and keep it simple. And these things in life have basically taught me.
You do definitely pick up on people's energies and they've either got a good energy or a bad energy. Mm. And again, it all goes down to that spirituality, the sharing of energies.
100%.
But with your mediumship, so you actually, did you start doing readings for people or was you?
Nah, nah.
I was going to say, because if you have got a gift, I just want to know what the fucking lottery numbers are for this week. That's all I want to know.
Bro, you know, I've always had that little gift, I'll be honest with you. I've always been able to know if something's not going to happen. Like, you know, you walk in a situation and you think, something's not right here.
Right.
You know, your initiative telling you, something's telling you that something's not right.
I mean, lots of people call it a sixth sense, but I also think it's like the third eye.
That's what it is.
The energy, you know.
It could even be your guardian angels trying to pass you. It could be anything, bro. Like we had that, I was talking about it on one of my last podcasts. We had an issue like this with a case a few years ago. This is when we were in Kent.
Right.
And we used to go on the run a lot. We practically lived in hotels. And then when I was staying in this one particular hotel, I'm not going to go into detail of how I found out because I don't want this person to be in trouble, yeah? But where we were staying in this hotel, we'd stayed there, I think, for about 6 months.
Right.
The police have turned up there one day and they've spoken to the staff and they wanted to bug our room. They said, when they come next, give them this room, bugged it all up fully, yeah? So we were like, all right, no problem. We'll play that game. So what we done, imagine, visualize you at the end of a corridor, yeah? You've got a window in front of you. You've got rooms all the way down on your left, rooms all the way down on your right. The last room on the left is the one that we took, yeah? This was not the room that they had given us. It was a random room, yeah? And what we done is we got some girl to go in and book that room for us.
Right.
So then when the police said, why didn't you give them the room we asked for? They were told, well, they didn't book that room. Someone else booked it on their behalf.
Right.
So we stayed at the room right at the end on the left-hand side. Now, we knew that they would have two options, either to come to the room next to us, because on the other side was a wall, yeah?
Right.
So either come next to us or come to the room in front of us.
Yeah.
So the room in front, we took that over as well. So now they only had one option to come into the room next to us. That room we fucking bugged the fuck out of. We had cameras in there, microphones, everything, yeah? So we've seen these guys coming. We knew exactly what police officer was sitting on what bench outside the services, reading a newspaper, pretending that he's acting like the member of the public and there's people sitting in the cars and stuff. We knew exactly who's feds and who wasn't, yeah? They've come into the room. They've pulled out these big suitcases like something out of the Matrix, yeah? They've got these big suction pumps on. They've stuck them onto the walls. And we're thinking, ah, shit, the picture that was there on that wall had a camera in there, which was watching everything.
Right.
So we thought, what if they take that fucking picture off? They take that picture off, we're fucked, right?
Right.
And then they'll see the camera. And so they put these suction things in, yeah? They started drilling holes through the bottom of the floor to see if they can try and get fiber optic cameras in. We saw it all, yeah?
Wow.
We were just watching everything, bro. We didn't say nothing, yeah? Then what's happened is, about 2 years later, one of my pals' place got raided for a kidnapping that we had done. And I think it was kidnapping and money extortion. I think it was about 150 grand. So they've turned up there. They've raided the whole place. They had to let us go because obviously there was no evidence. But they ended up finding those fucking CCTV footage from them being watched on while they're watching on us. Bro, they threw the whole fucking case up.
Wow.
Like, they didn't have any evidence anyway, but you imagine that, bro. The police come across it. Still, those evidence tapes, they did not give it back to us. They disappeared from the fucking list,
right,
from the property list. Yeah?
Yeah.
They could see that we were actually doing surveillance on police whilst the police were doing surveillance on us. Now, you tell me, how many people do you know that that have actually done that?
No, I don't know many.
There's nobody, bro.
Or any.
Even the craze and the, you know what I mean, the richest. I don't think any of them have actually done surveillance on the police while they're doing surveillance on them. You understand what I'm saying? So this just shows the level that we had it on. That, like, we had special task force set up in Kent. The senior inspector, I think he was the regional inspector, or whatever, of the whole of Kent. I think they brought him. They've taken him, took him out of retirement or something to bring him in on this case.
Yeah.
And they set up a special task force with over 150, 160 police officers, right, and their sole job was to take us down. They used to hold meetings in the local temples asking victims of our crimes to come forward. They used to put leaflets up on lampposts and stuff like that with numbers to call information without getting anyone in trouble. But these police officers were so corrupt, they even got down to a point where, and this is probably unheard of, they actually, the police officers themselves, got someone to come and petrobomb one of our properties that the boys were staying in to make it look like it was a rival gang. So then they were going to go and nab us doing something to the rival gang. Luckily, we found out through people that were in the police force that told us that this is what they're trying to do, be careful. So when they've done it, we just didn't do anything about it.
Fucking hell. I mean, that is on another level. Like,
We've had it naughty, bro. Naughty.
And then obviously, you said after you had that suicide attempt, you've come out of jail... you decided, obviously, to go down the Robin Hood path.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that basically just to be essentially like a equaliser so that if somebody knows you and they've got a problem with somebody or somebody's taking a liberty with them, you could literally step in and offer them a service so that they wouldn't have to go out of court, they wouldn't need to ring the police, they could just...
It can be sorted.
Right.
So, I mean, I...
So it wasn't Better Call Saul, it was Better Call Injection.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. Nothing was pre-planned. Like, I didn't sit there one day and get up and think, you know what, I'm going to be like this. It just sort of happened. You know, like, it all started with, I'd just come into the whole social media side of things, yeah?
Right.
You know, it was all new to me. I mean, I only had Facebook, bro. When I was in prison, I remember they let us out for... 1 hour a week, they'd let us out to go to the library, and my mate set up my Facebook account at the library. And even the picture that we put on there was a picture that we took at the desk while I was at the fucking library. Yeah, so you know, I wasn't very familiar with this whole social media thing. And then when I come on it, I realized I started getting a lot of people following me because they'd heard the name, right? But when I say a lot, it was 700-800 people, maybe 1,000 people.
Right.
Like, compared to everyone else at the time, like, they had like 100 people or whatever, you know what I mean, followers, right? So I was like, wow, you know, this is crazy. And then I thought, why don't we do this? These guys, rather than just beating the shit out of them, why don't we just beat the shit out of them and expose them to the public? So when they've done something wrong, yeah, let people know they've done something wrong.
Right.
So, you know, I've done a lot of things in the beginning, and I still do, that no one else could have done. I'll give an example. Like, now, so in the Sikh community, in the Sikh faith even, tobacco is forbidden, yeah? Right. In a serious way. So there was a group of guys that were smoking and drinking alcohol in the pub, in the car park for the Sikh temple. Now, even alcohol is forbidden, right? In the Sikh temple. So these guys, they had the boot open and they were sitting there pouring drinks and they were fucking knocking them back, right? So this video went viral. Everyone's talking about it on social media. Oh, fucking wankers, they can't survive this. But no one done anything about it, bro. So I got all these people, I've landed down their yard, about 15, 20 of us, yeah? And we just smashed in these guys, done them in hard, yeah? And then I made a video of these guys apologizing, and then you see all of us lot standing all at the back. Yeah, and all big lumps, and these guys are literally shaking, yeah? You know, it looked like you could tell this guy, he's had it stuck on hard, right? So he's apologised and everything. A few of the people in his circle, they've all apologised. And there was a lot of other cases similar to that, which had happened. Like, for example, in our faith, and I'm sure, to be honest with you, it's not just my faith,
yeah,
a lot of other faiths as well, interfaith marriages, they are allowed, but there's restrictions in a way where... So are you Christian?
Do you know something? I am, but I don't really... Okay. I just believe in God. And, I was born and I was christened, yeah, right? But I wasn't a regular churchgoer. Okay, but okay. I did go to church at Christmas and I did go to weddings
Christian
and funerals. But I, when I found sort of spirituality, I just believed in one God and the energy and all the rest of it. So yeah, I don't follow a religion, and that's not because I'm not religious. It's just because I think that a lot of these religions, like you said earlier, have been taken out of different things, and obviously people have interpreted it how they wanted to interpret. But for me, I think it's far simpler if you just accept there's just a God, and we're all one. Right?
Go on.
It's all love as well.
Yeah. Let me ask you something. Yeah. So in Christianity, do you think I would be allowed, being a Sikh, yeah, if I was to go there and get married in a church and I was to say those vows, which are only meaningful to a Christian, to a Sikh, they don't mean nothing.
Right.
Because you're not a Christian, right? I'm a Sikh, right? Would they allow that? They wouldn't, would they? Because those vows don't mean anything. I mean, same with even a Muslim.
Do you know what? I don't know is the answer, but I would imagine a friend of mine was a Roman Catholic. And she was a Roman Catholic. And then I think my friend, yeah, so she was a Roman Catholic. My friend was a Greek Orthodox. And he got married in a Roman Catholic church. And they did a ceremony. And it was kind of crazy because you had the Roman Catholic traditional ceremony, but then you had the Greek Orthodox thing. So you had people speaking in Greek. It was like mad because we didn't know what was going on when I was speaking in Greek.
It was different.
But the thing is, it was sort of like, this is your faith, this is my faith, but we're going to mix it up.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I think that for me personally, if you decided to marry a Christian and then you did a Christian ceremony and then you did a Sikh ceremony, I'd be perfectly happy with that. I wouldn't think, even though that you might not, but say, well, I'm not Christian, I'm Sikh, but that maybe that's a compromise, I don't know.
Yeah,
but.
And so how it works within Sikhism and Islam is exactly the same, even Hinduism is exactly the same, yeah? So if you were, for example, a Muslim and you're getting married in the mosque, yeah, those vows that you're saying, they won't mean nothing to you unless you're a Muslim.
Got it.
Okay, so it's the same with Sikhs. So what they say is, look, we don't have a problem you getting married to a non-Sikh. It's not a problem. Go and get a court marriage done, no issue, yeah?
Right.
But if you want to do a religious wedding, those vows that you're saying whilst you're going around the book, yeah, you're walking the holy book, while you're walking around the holy book, those vows, they won't mean nothing to you if you're not part of that religion, because you're just going to be thinking it's gibberish.
Right, got it.
You understand what I'm saying? So that was the issue. And so in, like for example, you guys got the Vatican. Once they've made a rule, it's throughout, right? So we've got something similar there, which is called the Akal Takht, which they had made a rule that it's forbidden, right? And then people over here in this country still started doing it. And then there was people that had tried coming in, stopping these, gatecrashing these weddings, coaches of them turning up there, yeah? And mobs and stuff, and trying to close these weddings down. And they'd call the police and whatnot. And then obviously I've stepped in. Now this is like 10 years into it, yeah? I've stepped in. When I've stepped in, I just changed everything, bro.
Right.
Like all the senior temples that were being run by the management, we knew all of them. We sat them all down in the meeting. We got them all together, and they knew that if they hadn't agreed to this now and come up with some kind of resolution, that it's not going to be shouting and screaming, I'll just walk off, bro. But then there's going to be people going to come and going to blow your front door off the next day. Yeah. They knew that, right? So they had to come up with some kind of decision because they knew I was involved.
Right.
Decision was made that we're going to make it national all over the country. It's not going to be allowed. Yeah. Bro, how many people on social media can turn around that watch this say, we could do that? None. I'm not perfect, bro. I'm anything but perfect. But if I'm trying to do something that's right, like, look, the laws in this country say certain things should be done by certain ways, yeah? The laws in our religion and each religion are done in a different way. I'm not an extremist. If anything, I'm not that religious at all. I'm like yourself, bro. I'm a spiritualist, you understand? I'm very spiritual, yeah? And when my missus passed away, I'm not going to lie to you, I did lose a lot of faith in God. I remember going to the Gurdwara and having so much hatred inside me, you know, saying, you know, how can you do this? Like, how can you just take her away from me? There's people like me who are going around torturing people for a living. And then there's someone like her, yeah? And I'm still here, you've taken her away. So there was a lot of anger, a lot of aggression there. And so I turned away from religion, to be honest with you. And then slowly, as I got more spiritual, I've come back in again. Yeah. But, you know, there's not many people out there that can turn around and say they can do what I'm doing. They can sit there and they can slate me off. It's not a problem, yeah? You got people here, like going back about that guy on the train station I was telling you about, yeah? You've got all these so-called wannabe gangsters that want to try and jump on the bandwagon and try and make a name, posting that video, say, bro, I'll fight you, come and see me, I challenge you, I'll fight you. Bro, you're old school, yeah? If I got a problem with you, am I going to ring you up and say, bro, I got a problem with you, come and see me? Or am I going to say, bro, I'm coming to you, watch? If you got a problem with someone, you're going to go for them, innit? You're going to go and see them, right? You're not going to give them an invitation and say, bro, I got a problem with you, come and see me. So these guys are pathetic people, bro. They want to do, like, everything's all social media clout. Yeah, let's come and do a charity boxing organizer match, this and that, yeah? Just so they can get some kind of clout. I'm not about that. I don't want a boxing charity match. Come and see me, bro. I'll rip out your face. You know what I mean? I'll take your teeth out and everything, bro. You know what I mean? Yeah, we'll do it in a different way, bro. We don't need to do this in front of the camera. Yeah. But these people are just clout chasers, bro. And they sit there and give it all the time.
If you did a video of that and put it on social media, you'd probably get a million likes.
Yeah, probably would as well. I literally just got one, literally just the other day, actually yesterday, somebody messaged me. They said, we'll give you 100 grand to do a charity boxing match. And I'm like, nah, man, I don't need the money. I don't need to sit there and say, oh, well, I'm going to make 100 grand. Yeah, so let's do that. Nah, I don't need to do that, man. You know, God's given me a lot. You know, financially, I'm doing very well. So I don't need to go down that route of stupidity.
Right. And obviously now, what you're doing now, because if you've got any businesses you're involved in or anything you want to talk about, or any things for the future that you're working on, I mean, I'd love to hear it.
Businesses, I'd rather not comment on, but...
Okay.
I keep my personal life quite separate when it comes to that.
Somebody's got a debt that needs collecting.
Oh yeah, they give come you a to shout. Me anytime. Okay. No problem. So you know, if there is a debt, I'll tell you straight. I will collect it. If you guys are going to be messaging me with stupid things like, oh bro, this person owes me £850. Or I had one guy message me saying, bro, I bought these trainers off this guy for 150 quid and he's knocked me. Like, really? You want me to go and stick it on someone for a 150 pound pair of trainers? You know what I mean? So, you know, if it's something pathetic, then no. Right. If it's something like, if it's worth it, like if it's over 100 grand debt, right, it's not a problem. I just make a phone call. I literally done one a couple of weeks ago. It was £260,000. I literally made one phone call. The guy paid the money. Another guy had done last week. He was trying to tax someone for £1 million. They're basically, they were actually going to pay the money, bro. They were actually going to pay the money until I've come on the scene. I made a phone call and I said, it's not going to happen. Simple as that. So it's literally just a phone call, bro.
Right.
You understand? And I don't ask for any return. I always say, look, give me whatever you want. Whatever you give me is going to go straight towards charity.
Wow.
You know? So like, we've had a lot of beef with a lot of big organizations in the past. I'm not going to mention any names, but a lot of guys that you hear about in books and whatnot, we've had confrontations with them and we ain't back down, bro.
Right.
We haven't, but there's too many of us.
Right.
There's way too many of us. Thing is, with me is I'm probably the only stupid one that has puts my face on the camera.
Right, okay.
But that's just, there has to be someone in it, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
But a lot of my boys, they won't have their pictures on cameras. You won't see them. Like even when we go out, you know, yeah. You'll have 5 or 6 of us taking a picture, and then behind the camera, you see about 20 of them because they don't want to get in front of the camera, you know what I mean? Right. So we get a lot of that though.
Amazing. Mm. Well, Jasper, I've really enjoyed hearing your story. I think, you know, you've been an amazing guest. And, you know, it was great to hear about, you know, your journey. I mean, it was obviously heartbreaking to hear about you losing, you know, the love of your life. But again, I think you have to take positives from the negatives. And I think the positive is, obviously, you've gone on a different path. You're helping others. And obviously, you know, you're doing your bit to stamp out the, you know, this grooming stuff that's going on. And you know, helping the police. I mean, do you hand them over to the police, these guys, if you catch them? Right, okay. You just have a word with them and...
Yeah, proper words with them.
And then...
I don't think we want to go to the police after this book.
Let them know about the errors of their ways.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe. You know what it is, bro? You can go to the police and... It just becomes complicated, bro.
Right.
You know, you can these people, when they you take them to the police, it becomes a holiday for them.
Right.
You don't want them to have an easy way out. Right. You want them to understand what they've done is wrong.
Well, Jasper, I've really enjoyed having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Bro,
it's great to be connected. Thanks so much for tuning into the Criminal Connection podcast, Injection. What an amazing guest. What a great story. I'm sure you'll be inspired by his stories and his experiences and his journey. If you want to find him, look him up on Instagram. And if you need any debts collecting, he's your man. Better not call Saul, better call Injection. Thanks again for tuning in. Another great guest coming your way next week. Make sure you like, subscribe, and tell your friends about the Criminal Connection podcast. We'll see you on the other side.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.